Welcome back. I'm Charlie Stone. Jeff doing a great job over here. We have Senator Charles Grassley with us this morning, as we do on a regular basis. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? I'm on a cell phone. I had a meeting downtown. I'm on my way back to chair the Judiciary Committee, so I hope we don't get disconnected. I'm glad to talk to you. Thank you for this opportunity.
It's our pleasure, and I know you have limited time because you have business to attend to. Let's start out with, on a local basis, we just had a primary here. Your colleague, Steve King, came out successful on that primary. But the argument had been made that he has spent too much time in Congress, and according to some people, maybe you have spent too much time in the Senate. What say you, Senator?
Well, the last time I had a chance to vote on term limits, I voted for it. But I don't think Iowa should be penalized. In other words, change the Constitution, have term limits, if that's what the people of this country want. But I think it would be wrong for a person to term limit themselves from the standpoint of seniority being so important in the United States Congress that Iowa should not be penalized because of what Iowans might do or want their representatives to do versus what the other 49 states might do.
All right, I want to move from that over to you were the subject of an op-ed piece today in our local Sioux City Journal. It was from the Quad Cities Times, though, in Quad City, Iowa, the Quad Cities of Iowa. It talks about your outrage at the military situation with rapes in the military, et cetera, and I want you to continue and speak on that for a brief moment. You are even putting your name on some legislation, correct?
Yeah, and I think we'll have a vote today on the Gillibrand-Grassley bill. Gillibrand's a Democrat from New York, and we tried this bill last time. We got a majority of the Senate, but we didn't get the 60 votes necessary to get it adopted. So we're trying again based on the proposition that we were misled by the Pentagon, that they were going to take care of this problem of rape, and consequently then we're going to try again because we think that we can prove that we were misled by the Defense Department and get the necessary votes to get this legislation passed. I'll give you an example, because I got involved with the you call it the Inspector General of the Defense Department. Got involved in thanking him for the first time taking a whistleblower's complaint about being raped and the fact that the officer above that was a rapist actually was protected by the general above that officer. And in turn, the person who was raped because of whistleblowing was retaliated against. So for the first time, I've seen an inspector general kind of take the bull by the horns and say to the Secretary of Army, you got to correct this situation, and this general that's protecting the rapist can't do that. So it's just one example of what our legislation is trying to take care of. And a similar problem on university campuses. And you've got to start looking at whether it's on a university campus or a military operation, rape or any sexual assault is a crime, and it's got to start being treated as a crime, or you're just going to encourage more of it.
You're the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it's sort of quieted down, but it's still there. Your opposition to Barack Obama's appointment to the Supreme Court, where do we stand on that right now? Is it just in neutral as we speak?
Well, there's a majority of the Senate feels that we ought to follow some principles that were laid down by Democrats over the last 30 years, that when you have a Republican president and there is a vacancy in the Supreme Court in the last year of that presidency, that the people ought to have a voice through the election of their president, whoever they vote for, and that the new president should do the appointment. And the majority of the Senate agrees with that principle, and you can't have one rule for a Republican president and another rule for a Democrat president. And so we're following the same principle. So I guess it is in neutral, to use your words, but also don't forget that we're still continuing to approve of judges. Today, in an hour, we will be dealing with four judges that are on the agenda, and we've had hearings on 47 judges this year. We're way ahead of where Senator Leahy was in the previous Congress, and overall in this administration of the Obama administration, we've approved 326 judges compared to 303 that Democrats approved in the same period of time in the last Bush administration. So it seems to me that we're moving along according to schedule. We have 31 judicial emergencies, they're called, but the president has only sent up 12 nominees for those 31 judicial vacancies. We can't act on the other 19 until the president makes a choice.
Well, we have a situation, speaking of the judiciary, with the presumptive nominee, Donald Trump, really going after His Honor Curiel about his Trump University suit. Your thoughts on that? I mean, there are many in the Republican Party that have just said, whoa, that's now, we're trying to unite here. Look, what are you doing, Mr. Trump?
Well, Trump shouldn't have do that. I think he's even hurting his own cause, not to be elected president, but hurting his own cause on his particular issue that the case that he has. And if he feels like he's unfairly treated, just like if Charlie Stone felt that he had an unfair judge, there's a legal process of making motions to change judges that he should go through. That's the best way to do it. I don't approve of what he said, and I would advise him to file these motions, because everybody's entitled to have a judge that will hear your case based upon the law and the facts of the case. And judges have to be impartial, and he shouldn't be making any statements about the ethnic background of a particular judge. Maybe he didn't mean any ill will as a result of it, but it sure came across that way. And you can't have ethnic or religious tests to be a judge or to even run for the United States Senate under our Constitution.
Well, let me ask you this, Senator. You're at ground zero on the judiciary, and there has been discussion that this particular judge is a member of La Rosa. He's a member of some political movements that would be the opposite of what Donald Trump is. Do you ever wonder, as you go through the process of creating judges in our system, that impartiality, that's wonderful on paper, but how do we truly know that they're impartial?
Well, you mean before they get selected or after they're judges?
Well, both, I guess. Let's start before they get selected, because that's where your world is.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't forget, a president, whether it's a Trump or a Hillary Clinton, they can't appoint judges. They can only nominate judges, and the appointment comes only after the Senate has given approval. So there's a checks and balances to make part of that. And then within the Judiciary Committee, that's something you have to sort out after reading an FBI report, after there's a lot of questions by the FBI of people who go around and ask questions about a nominee. It's a pretty thorough process. We get the paper on that to review, and then you've got the Q&A that you have with the candidate when they come before the committee. Now, obviously, you could make a mistake, and some mistakes, I suppose, are made even though they aren't intended. And but it's the checks and balances you have to go by. Once they get on the court, then if they aren't impartial, the only thing you can do is impeachment. But impeachment doesn't come just because you might consider them to be impartial on one case or one issue. It comes then through the motions that I'm talking about that Trump should take if he feels he's got a judge that isn't going to give him a fair hearing. filed a motion and asked for a new judge. And if a judge doesn't agree with you, then you can appeal it all the way up the ladder. And I think that's a process that's worked well, because once again, everybody's entitled to fair and equal treatment. Everybody's equal before the law, and it's just something the Constitution gives you, and it's got to be enforced.
One of the discussions during this presidential cycle is the unity of the GOP. You come from a really high perspective in that GOP, from the Washington viewpoint. Is it uniting, or are there still cracks? Are there still discussions and arguments?
Well, I think they're very quiet, but I think that Trump can help himself a lot by talking more policy, being a little more mild manner as he speaks. I think that that people don't want a third term of a Republican, or I mean a third term of an Obama administration, and that's what you're going to get with Hillary. And that weighs heavily on people's minds, particularly since the Inspector General report came out and she violated the law on using a home server and not protecting classified information, and how she lied to the families of the Benghazi victims when she said that she was going to get to the bottom of it and do everything she could, or that she did everything she could where evidence doesn't back that up. And so, you know, people wonder about Republicans vis-a-vis Trump. There's a lot of Democrats that are having problems with Hillary lying.
Right. Well, I'm. Are you telling me that, yeah, they are uniting, or no, maybe they're not?
Slowly uniting.
Now I want to get over to Hillary. We have a situation. You're right. The Inspector General. We got Director Comey have come out. Evidence seems to be insurmountable that laws have been violated. It's going to be handed over to the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. There are bets out there, Senator, as you well know, that will it be acted on, will it not be acted on? And if it isn't acted on, James Comey is going to throw his hands in the air and say, I quit. I'm out of here. I didn't sign on for this kind of job. How do you think this is going to unfold?
Well, you can be sure that Comey doesn't have to be under political pressure, because he has a 10-year term and he's only 2 or 3 years into it. So he can act very independently and ethically and morally and enforce the law. And I expect, with the reputation of the FBI, he's going to do that. Now, let's suppose he thinks she ought to be prosecuted, and the Attorney General doesn't prosecute, then that could be seen, and probably would be seen, as a political decision. Where members of Congress, particularly me being chairman of the judiciary, come into that. If she thinks there's reason for not being prosecuted, and because most of these FBI reports are not made public, we have to have a good understanding of what the FBI found out, why she ought to be prosecuted or not prosecuted. And there's got to be total transparency in order to make the Attorney General accountable.
All right. We have sort of reached the limit, because I want to make sure you get to your committee hearing and your vote position at 9 o'clock like you need to be there. And I want to thank you, Senator, for joining us for a brief moment, and thank you for all the good work and continued success, sir.
Yeah, you know, I need to compliment you and your radio station for helping us to communicate with our constituents. Now, this communication is one way from me to them, but I hope that they realize that their mail or their coming to my town meetings is very important to me, their email as well, and I hope by having this one-way communication through your program, I encourage people to give me their opinions any way they can. Even phoning in, if you leave your name and address, we'll answer on paper. So I thank you and your radio station for helping the two-way communication that's necessary for the process we call representative government.
Thank you so much, Senator. It's our pleasure. And have yourself a wonderful day today, sir.
Okay, goodbye.